a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. I'm going to call to order the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. Want to welcome our audience that's here today and our home listening audience. And we have new pages and we have a new one. Come to the microphone over here. Press the green button and tell us your name, where you're from, and if you have any future plans.
My name is Natalie Baronic. I am from Timber Lake, South Dakota. My plans are to go to Northern State University to study elementary ed.
Very good. A teacher. Well reserved. Thank you so very much. Just a reminder, if you're going to testify, to please sign in. When you do come to testify, always please identify yourself so our home listening audience knows who's speaking. With that, I will ask the secretary to call the roll.
Senators Bradford. Curd.
Here.
Jensen.
Here.
Krebs.
Here.
Rampelberg.
Here.
Soholt.
Here.
Hunhoff.
Here.
There is a quorum.
Thank you. With that, I would ask a motion for the minutes from our last meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Senator Jensen, second by Goldberg. All those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. This morning, we're going to reverse the order on the bill hearing so that we can accommodate to the representative's schedule. So with that, we will begin with House Bill 1198, which revises certain provisions regarding the administration of medical treatment for individuals with mental illness. Proponents, please, and good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and Committee. My name is Mike Stevens. I represent District 18, and I'm here for support for House Bill 1198. I want to kind of give you just a really a quick background note on this. Back in the 80s, I was hired by Attorney General Meyer Henry to represent the state hospital dealing with situations where patients who needed psychotropic medication were refusing to take the medication. And so I was hired specifically to handle those type of cases. When I was asking him about, you know, what do we do? How do we start? You know, what forms can I use to deal with this? He basically said, well, make something up. And so what we did is we did a lot of research regarding due process rights, patients' rights, I brought the first petition. And from that, we had a circuit court decision. And as a result of that, that's really the essence, that's really the beginning of dealing with medication, dealing with patients who are refusing to do that. At the heart of all of that legislation always was really a balancing of two things. Number one was obviously the patient's constitutional rights, as well as on the other side of it is when the state, particularly when someone gets involuntarily committed, the state has an obligation to do what's best for those patients. And so there was kind of a balancing that took place. As a result, over the years, we've had different amendments made to the this particular statute. And this bill is looking at is trying to work out a logistical problem that has resulted in legislation or an amendment that was passed not too long ago. Currently, there's two situations where medication can be provided to a patient. That is an emergency situation where it's to prevent harm to the person or harm to others. What we're really talking about in this particular situation, however, is the circumstance where the patient needs the medication. And what the statutes currently provide is this: if an attending physician, one, and another physician, so you have two physicians, determine medication is necessary to prevent significant deterioration of the person's severe mental illness, and the second criteria, the person's potential for improvement would be significantly impaired, such treatment is not provided, then they're allowed to give medication, but a hearing has to be set up. What the current law provides is this has to be done on a 5 business day, and what has happened is you have these situations where the person comes in on a weekend, and what you've really got is you have to set up a hearing within 10 days. Well, if they come in on a weekend, you've got 2 days there, 5 days there, and what logistically has to happen is you virtually have to, when the person comes in, is immediately set a hearing whether you need a hearing or not. And what we found in this situation here, it's almost be like this: if you would go to your physician and you say, here's my symptoms, and the physician says, well, I'm going to give you this medication, but we're going to schedule surgery anyway. 10 days down the road, and then you find out the medication works, you've tied up the surgery room unnecessarily. And that's really what's been happening at the state hospital. The Department of Social Services has kept track of that over the past year since their initial 10 days was set up. And 64% of the time, they don't have a hearing, but yet they've tied up the court systems in order to do that. And in this situation here, what we're really asking to do is to do an additional 10 days. It doesn't change the criteria. The criteria still remains the same. You still have to have the same number of physicians. And you need to understand that when someone gets involuntarily committed to the South Dakota Human Services Center, they are appointed an attorney. There is a hearing in front of a circuit court judge. They're allowed to subpoena witnesses. They're allowed to testify. They can bring in just like in a regular trial. So their due process rights are clearly taken care of in that situation. Down in our circuit, and I would say Yankton County maybe handles 85-90% of all of those type of situations. You know, we don't have it like in the larger areas where you have judges that are there all the time. Our judges literally ride the circuit, and they go to other counties. The current law, which this bill does not change, automatically requires to make these hearings a priority hearing. So the patient is being really looked after, and in that regard. We have spoken to the South Dakota Advocacy. They're in support of this, so there isn't any issue as far as they're concerned. And I believe that this really is a bill that would really not tie up the courts on one hand, and I think that's important for us to not tie them up unnecessarily. But more importantly, I think what it also does is it doesn't disrupt the treatment, which prolongs hospitalization. And I really think that's the best argument for this. There's nothing worse than when I was doing these medication hearings, you know, you would see the same person over and over again because they take their medication, they quit taking their medication, they end up back in the hospital, they put them on the medication. It takes a while for that medication to get at the level where it's a maintenance level where they keep it. And the way that the current law does is it allows for disruption of it, and they have to start all over again. And I think it prolongs the time that they're in the hospital. And that's why logistically I think this bill makes sense. Like I said, we did talk to South Dakota Advocacy, and they felt that this was appropriate under the circumstances. So we're changing the business days. We're including to 10. They still get a hearing. They still get represented. And so for those reasons, I would ask that the committee pass this bill, and I'll stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents for House Bill 1198. Good morning and welcome. Thank you. Further proponents for House Bill 1198. Further proponents. Okay, not seeing any further proponents. Are there opponents to House Bill 1198? Opponents to House Bill 1198. Seeing no opponents, are there questions? Senator Soholt.
Thank you, Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure what's going on here. Let me fix it. Thanks. They think this is for Amy Iverson Polrez. It's just a statute. I just wanted to sort out a statute question. Last year, we had a House Bill 1019. Which had to do with this whole involuntary psychotropic drugs for jailed prisoners, and there was just a lot of questions on that. And I'm trying to understand just chapters of statute in this. I'm supportive of the concept, and so this is to amend in chapter 27, and it's you were talking specifically about like mental health hospital and that kind of situation. How is this different then from what we did for the jailed prisoners, which was into 2411? I'm just trying to sort out because I looked up 27 and I was just trying to see, is it specific to mental health facilities? How does this work in connection with that whole jailed? You know what I'm asking? Thank you. Wasn't a great question, so thank you for nodding your head that you might get it.
I think I know what you're asking.
All right, great. Thank you.
Senator Rampelberg, did you have a question?
Same question.
Okay.
Thank you.
I do have a question for Representative Stevens. Just to walk through this very simply, all right? So we have somebody that's involuntary committed, and you gave the examples. It takes two physicians to say that this needs to be done, and then very specific that it's being done because of their behavior, they'd hurt themselves or others. Okay, so we have the individual that's involuntarily committed, day 8 of the first 10 days. So then it's determined we need to go extra. So detail the process out then.
Well, if you determine that you need to... I'm sorry, I didn't have that on. If you determine by day 8 that you need to continue on with this, you got to then... You have to go get certified copies of the documents the way it currently provides. Well, you got to make sure that the clerk of courts is open, okay? And if they're not open, depending on how that falls, then you have to add 2 days. Then you have to add 5 days, and what happens then, you got to quit giving them the medication. And that's the deal. And it's really, the criteria is actually even more severe than that because, you know, for you to be involuntarily committed, you have to be a danger to yourself and others. That's the initial threshold. Then when you get to the part about psychotropic medication, there are two more qualifications than that is, and it has to be supported by two physicians that has to be documented in their files, the records. And the first one is that the medication is necessary to prevent significant deterioration of the person's severe mental illness and that the person's potential for improvement wouldn't be significantly impaired if such treatment is not provided. So, I mean, it's a really rigorous process that they have to go through. So, but logistically, you know, you can have a situation where, you know, you're starting to see a lot more situations where the courts are just so tied up. I mean, like in Yankton, we have Judge Ng there, and he's there on Mondays, and all Monday is completely filled with criminal. He's there on Thursday, and it's all completely filled with juvenile, you know, and then he's on the road. But yet the statute, which this does not change, still makes that a priority type of a thing.
Okay. Just a follow-up. I'm back if the law is in place. I'm on day 8. Then you would have to petition again and have another hearing, same process for the next 10 days. That's all I'm trying to
I'm
get
sorry,
the second.
I didn't understand.
I'm sorry,
right.
I didn't ask it correctly. So that there'd have to be a second hearing for that, but it would have to be within 15 days, that hearing on that second 10-day.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the extra 10 days is a maximum, you know, and I will want to follow up with what was said previously. When I did these involuntary medication hearings for 4 or 5 years, and it's really interesting that I found was that, you know, this is not a situation where patients are being held down and having to do that. I mean, I got to be really almost on a first name basis with some of these people because they came back so often. And it was a cyclical thing. They'd take it, then they wouldn't take it, and then they would be back. And it was really interesting that if a judge said, okay, now you need to take this, invariably they took it. And I also saw, too, that the hospital staff at HSC, they were so good of talking with their patients. And, you know, once that patient also got an attorney, somebody that they felt, and that's what happens is they were appointed an attorney right away to represent them, because that's what happens. When they feel like they had somebody else who that attorney says, you know what, you really need to take this medication, you'll get out of here quicker. That's why you get a statistic like 64% of the time these things get resolved. But the way it is right now, the court literally has to set aside times. And I've been up there where the court had an entire afternoon that was scheduled where he could have been doing something else, and every one of them 100% canceled out. And so this is what this is trying to prove, is to help the patient first and free up the court system.
Thank you. Thanks. Any other questions? If not, I will close this hearing to public testimony and open it up for discussion and or action. Senator Soho.
Madam Chair, I move to pass House Bill
1198. Second.
It's been moved by Senator Soho, second by Senator Krebs, to do approve House Bill 1198. Any comments on that motion?
You know, I just want to say that after House Bill 1019 last year and a lot of discussion that we had on this, this is really the most compassionate care. I mean, I really heard Representative Stevens' argument on clearing up the courts, but really what this is about is helping people that they feel better, then they go off their meds. This is severe, psychotic. This to me is like saying, well, I'm a diabetic and we're not going to give you any insulin. And so this is one of those things where we're trying to provide protection of care and also allow the process of protections for the patient so that there are appropriate hearings. So I'm very supportive of the concept.
Thank you. With that, the motion before you is do pass on House Bill 1198. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Bradford, Curd, Jensen,
aye.
Krebs,
aye.
Rompelberg,
aye.
Soholt,
aye.
Hunhoff,
aye.
5-4-2, excuse.
House Bill 1198 is passed and will go down on the floor. Thank you. Thank you. We will now move to House Bill 1157. 1157 provides for the retrospective payment of clean claims for covered services provided by a healthcare professional during the credentialing period. Proponents for House Bill 1157. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Scott Eklund, representative from District 25. Which includes the very eastern part of South Dakota all the way to Minnesota and around Brandon, north up to Del Rapids, Garrettson, et cetera. House Bill 1157 is a bill that provides for the retrospective payment of clean claims for covered medical services by a healthcare professional during the credentialing period. It also puts a limit on the amount of time that an insurer can take to complete the credentialing process. Let me give you an example of how this would work. Let's say there's a physician who is a surgeon in Boca Raton, Florida, and he decides that he doesn't like the weather and he wants to move to better weather such as Pierce, South Dakota. For whatever reason, he decides to come here. He maybe joins a clinic in Pierce. And he sets up shop. He sends all of his credentials to the local insuring agencies that are here in town, in Pierce, probably different than the ones that are in Boca Raton. So he sends in his credentials. The insurance company then reviews those credentials. And right now, there is no time frame in which to complete those reviews. So they can last up to 6 months, 9 months before he is credentialed. What this bill does is, number one, it allows for once he's credentialed, then the payment can be made for the patients that he's seen during the credentialing period. And number two, it puts a 90-day limit on the time frame that is allowed for him to be credentialed. Right now, Iowa has a 90-day limit on that, and many of the insurance companies that work with us in South Dakota are also working in Iowa, and they're already compliant there. So what this would ask that we would put that 90-day limit on that. This bill continues to allow for extra time for special circumstances, or maybe he left something blank, the application is somehow incomplete, and those things may come to light during the process, and this still allows for increase in the length of time if that occurs. This bill does not affect health care programs that are subject to federal regulations. So with that, I'll stand aside and be available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents for 1157? Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Justin Bell. I'm an attorney from Pierce. I'm also a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota State Medical Association. South Dakota State Medical Association and its more than 2,000 members statewide would ask for your favorable consideration of House Bill 1157. Dr. Eklund gave a very good overview as to what this bill does, or Representative Eklund, excuse me, I should state. However, I will give you a little bit more of a background and a little bit of the, I guess I'd say, line by line of what this bill does regarding such. But before I get into that, the first thing, some of you probably have a better knowledge of the credentialing process than I did when it came down to looking at this bill and drafting the bill. But one thing that some of you, for example, me, when I first was looking at this, asked, what exactly is credentialing? What is the process? And credentialing is the process by which a health insurer or a payer verifies the healthcare practitioner's professional qualifications when they make decisions regarding participation within an insurer's network. Such generally includes, for example, looking at the relevant training, education, and licensure status prior to an insurer or a payor allowing them into their network. Providers need to obtain credentialing, obviously, before becoming part of that network. And without credentialing in place, a practice will be unable to provide care for patients covered by that insurance company. And I should probably back up, and they can still provide care for the patients. But when they're doing such, they wouldn't be paid at the same rate as other people in the provider's network when they're doing so. Without proper and complete credentialing, an insurance company may choose to deny the claims or pay at a partial rate while they're seeing those patients when they're not in network. South Dakota health insurance market's unique. It's largely dominated by only a few payers and healthcare systems. As a result of that unique market, healthcare providers are especially negatively impacted when there's unreasonable delays in the credentialing process, because there's only a few people or a few payers that are out there that they're being paid on, and generally they're not getting paid during the credentialing period, during the time frame that they're making the decision that goes along with this. Over the past year, many in our membership, the Medical Association's membership, became affected by significant delays in the credentialing process. For purposes of testimony today, I'll focus on one example. However, I don't want anyone on the committee to think this is a situation where there was only one example, but I think this example does show the impact of unreasonable delays in the credentialing process. We're aware of specific situation where the time for a change request, moving locations on a practice similar to what Dr. Eklund stated, except in this circumstance it was within the state, within the provider network, took more than 6 months. The application was pending for longer than 6 months. As a result of that delay, a small independent physician practice lost that physician. The physician left the state to go somewhere else because they couldn't stand not getting any income from that payer during that time period. The pediatrician left, went to another place out of state, and it's especially frustrating to our membership and the healthcare delivery system in the state when that person was already credentialed and working within that community in that circumstance. As I said, we're aware of other circumstances. This isn't the only time where there were problems during the past year, but that one is particularly frustrating because of the fact that we lost a provider in the state based off of this problem. To help alleviate such, before you is HB 1157, has four sections, and although there's some differences, it's modeled after the regulations that are in place in Iowa right now, which was referenced by Dr. Eklund. I will give you a short, brief run-through those sections, but I'm not going to read it for you word for word. Certainly, if you have questions, I'm happy to discuss those with you at the appropriate time. The first section is definitional. It's definitions as to the bill. I'm not going to go through those specifically, but if you have any questions, as I said, feel free to ask. Section 2 requires the following. First, the health insurer must make a credentialing decision within 90 days of receipt of a completed credentialing application. Second, if an uncompleted application is received, an insurer must notify the healthcare professional within 30 days of its receipt that it's not complete. Third, a health insurer may require more than 90 days if a special review is required. For example, those situations would be times when there's a pending malpractice or licensure case. That's something that's not in the Iowa regulation, but we believe to be a reasonable exception to the 90-day credentialing period time frame. And fourth, a healthcare practitioner cannot submit claims until after a credentialing decision has been made, but the date to judge whether a claim is based on when the credentialing decision was made, so it won't be deemed an untimely submission if it's because of the credentialing period that it wasn't submitted for such. Section 3, as the bill in its current form specifically, says that an application must be sent to a practitioner within 10 business days of the receipt of the request, except for situations that would have insurance companies who have their credentialing application online. This is just a way to make sure that there is reasonable access to such applications. Lastly, the bill is a relatively standard section that does not, that states that the bill doesn't apply to Medicaid or Medicare payment or TRICARE payment, and that it doesn't affect URAC or NCQA standards. And lastly, that it's not a mandate to a non-credentialed, or that a non-credentialed professional must be able to participate in the network. I don't even want to, what that means is I don't want there to be confusion with last year's any willing provider bill in this bill. This is not that. It's not, don't get confused over the discussion of credentialing and networks and think this is that bill. It's not. It's a separate issue. As previously stated by Representative Eklund and myself, this is a bill that's modeled after Iowa regulations, which mandates a 90-day turnaround time. However, many states have very similar regulations to this. I don't want you to think that this is something that only is in Iowa. Looking through other states' regulations regarding credentialing timeframes is not a specifically easy task, and so I'm not going to give you a comprehensive list of every state's regulations because I don't know if that would be possible to wade through every state's regulations. However, I am aware of certain states who have shorter turnaround times than 90 days. For example, New Hampshire has a 30-day turnaround time for non-specialists and 45 days for specialists. New Mexico and Oklahoma have a 45-day credentialing time frame. New Mexico, Maine, North Carolina, Texas, Vermont, Indiana, and Rhode Island all have 60-day turnaround time frames for credentialing decision. And several more states, more than either of the previous two, have the same 90-day credentialing time frame as you see in this bill. That would include, for example, Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, Louisiana, Kentucky, Arkansas, New Jersey, Oregon, and Tennessee. There may be others, but those are the ones I've confirmed through looking at regulations that have similar statutes. In addition, many of these states require notification of incomplete applications within a certain time frame. For example, New Hampshire has a 15-day turnaround time for such, and New Mexico has a 10-day turnaround time for such. Many other states also propose a 30-day turnaround time that you'll see in HB 1157. So with that, we believe this to be reasonable regulation modeled after the norm in states, and it's not overly burdensome considering some of the other time frames that you see throughout the United States. In closing, the South Dakota State Medical Association believes that anything beyond 90 days to credential a health care professional is unreasonable and untimely and harmful to our health care delivery system. Therefore, reasonable legislation is required to prevent the further loss of physicians and other health care professionals as a result of unreasonable delays in the health care professional credentialing process. This is particularly true when one considers that one in four South Dakotans live in a primary care shortage area. We cannot afford to lose physicians to surrounding states as a result of their inability to be credentialed within a reasonable time frame. Thank you, and once again, I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Other proponents for House Bill 1157. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Randy Moses, Fair Health Plans. First of all, I'd like to say we appreciate the sponsor's willingness to work with us on this piece of legislation. We initially had some technical issues that need to be dealt with, and we were able to put an amendment on this to address the concerns on the payer side, and we appreciate that. We think that the bill in its current form has a good balance, providing enough time to get the credentialing done. We've got some clarity in there now with the respect to be able to do it either in paper or electronically, and we have some clarity as far as when the period ends and when it starts. So we think this is a good balance as to the provider side and the payer side, and we appreciate your support of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents for House Bill 1157. Other proponents. Are there opponents to 1157? Opponents? Opponents. Seeing none, I will open this up for questions by the committee. Senator Solholt.
Thank you. I would just have one question just regarding the turnaround time. we may not know this, but is there an aggregate credentialing turnaround time that exists in South Dakota right now, you know, excluding the Medicare, Medicaid, and...
Madam Chair, Senator Soholt, I don't know the answer as to what the average time frame is outside of, you know, Medicaid, Medicare, TRICARE. I do know that that there are certain URAC standards, but those are relatively loose, I would state. We don't know, and I don't know, the specifics regarding the turnaround time, and a lot of it depends on what kind of healthcare professional we're talking about, what issues they have in their application. But I apologize, I don't know the answer to that question.
Follow-up. So this is more just in relationship to instances where it has happened, and there have been enough instances to start to set the 90 days.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Other questions? I have a few. Absence always makes me question. So we're talking about the insurance industry. We had one provider here of that. I guess absence of the others makes me ask the question.
Madam Chair, as a starting point, I will say on the health side, the other insurers did have folks here. There are other bills up right now that I think they're probably focused on more than this. But regarding the specific question, what's happening with the other payers, there was on the health side when this was proposed, significant discussion with pretty much everybody that you could imagine. Wellmark, Dakota Care, I think both systems, as well as Sudaho and some other interested parties that you would expect to see here for a bill such as this. Discussion was had, and you'll know that this bill was amended on the House side to address various concerns, and those concerns are mostly those that were addressed by Mr. Moses in his testimony, was to make sure that the technical aspects of this bill are in compliance. There was some discussion in relation to time frames. Everyone, I don't want to speak for other people, but I think it's fair to say that 90 days is a reasonable time frame. It's not something that would be overly onerous. There was some discussion on the House side and the committee specifically as to whether or not to make that time frame shorter than 90 days. That if that were the case, you would see significant opposition here. But this was something that I believe the interested parties, after it being introduced, came together, worked through their differences, and came through with a piece of legislation that is good for the healthcare delivery system and also is a reasonable regulation that the payers could live with. Although, I think I'm obviously talking from the provider standpoint, not the payer standpoint. Maybe Mr. Moses is a better person to answer your question, but that's my take on it, Senator.
Thank you. And I have a question for Representative Ackland. Recognizing that you belong to medical staffs, and one of our members also belongs to medical staff, from the time frame for credentialing when you join a medical staff, is there a time frame in place that you need to complete the application and it needs to be acted upon by the organization that you're joining to be on their medical staff?
Madam Chair, thanks for the question, Representative Ackland. It's been close to 30 years since I joined a medical staff because I practiced in one spot. So I'm not sure that I can give you a good answer there, but you know, I was I'm on the health committee on the other side of the house, and the question came up whether we should shorten it to 60 days, and it seemed like if we did that, there would be some opposition, and I'm not sure if I'm answering your question yet, but 90 days seems to be a reasonable time frame to me, and I think it is to other physicians.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, then I'll close this hearing to public testimony and open it up for discussion and or action. Senator Soholt.
Madam Chair, I move to pass House Bill 1157.
It's been moved by Senator Soholt, seconded by Senator Kerr, do pass on House Bill 1157. Any comments on that motion? Seeing none, The vote before you is do pass on House Bill 1157. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Bradford's excused. Curd?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Krebs?
Aye.
Rampelberg?
Aye.
Soholt?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Is unanimous.
Motion carried. Do pass on House Bill 1157. Senator Rampelberg.
Is there a reason we have not put this on consent calendar?
Well, you have to see if. We didn't amend it here. Amended came over, so, I mean, that certainly can be a motion. Okay. It's been moved and seconded for consent on House Bill 1157. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. House Bill 1157 goes to consent.
Randy?
I have some materials to hand out. As you recall, for those that were in attendance, Paige, this is a fiscal note that has come back on Senate Bill 122 as amended that we sent over to appropriations, and this has to do the coverage of services for audiology. So, as you get the fiscal note, the department gave a little bit of background, and it says, I think for the home listening audience on this, that this bill was to provide the coverage for audiology services subject to certain limitations for children as defined as a person 21 years of age or younger. And this fiscal note seeks to determine the cost to the state of South Dakota based on the federal requirements that the states must defray costs for coverage of additional benefits beyond those in the essential health benefits. A background was given as far as where they came to this, if this bill would become effective on July 1st of 2014, and gave the time frames, what would be impacted. Supporting data was analysis was provided by Leaf Associates at the request of the Department of Labor, Division of Insurance, dated February 20th, 2014. And again, looking. The impact on if you had full implementation, the written was the estimate would be $313,771 that the state would be if that was maximum enrollment. The initial impact based on current enrollment, if you looked at those that were now currently in programs, it said would somewhere in that first year be estimated not to be greater than $100,000 or $150,000. But again, they gave you considerations. We're looking at the other providers, Wellmark, Blue Shield, state employee plan consideration. And so that is what is provided. I believe Senator Sutton has a copy of this, so that will also be provided to appropriations. So it's really FYI since we've moved that bill out of this committee. With that, we are concluded. On Wednesday, we have two bills that we will hear testimony on, and then next Monday we're scheduled for one bill. So that's what we have on our agenda for right now. With that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Senator Rampelberg, seconded by Senator Jensen. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. We are adjourned.